Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Where are we? 38. 38 is right? Okay. Tata Vastava Pratichedha Dausati Samadadi Karanya Gyanamatrena Natatyagas Chabavit Tatpadarta Prabhavas Tatrakaranam iti ched asmakam evamatam sammatam. What is more, if division or any other distinguishing process is indeed a fact, it cannot be undone simply by theoretical knowledge of substantial difference. One might suggest that the power of the Supreme is the cause of dispelling illusion. But to say that is to agree with our position. Okay. We're still working on the alternative that the upadis are real. Something is covering Brahman and creating the appearance of duality, but whatever it is, let's assume that something is real. But if it is, how is it that just by knowing something you didn't know before, theoretically, is going to change the situation? If it was just a mental creation, then okay, changing your mind would make it go away. But if it has any reality of its own, you're just thinking that it's not there isn't going to make it go away. Okay, commentary. The process for self-realization as taught by Shankaracharya centers on the cultivation of transcendental knowledge. After executing the various preliminary duties for purification, a serious follower of Shankara's sadhana is directed to enter the renounced order of life, sannyas, and to meditate on the essential phrases, mahavakyas, of the Upanishads that indicate the jiva's oneness with the Supreme. Such phrases as Aham Brahmasmi, I am the Supreme, which is from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. At Tattvamasi, you are that Supreme. That is from the Chandogya Upanishad. Thus one is meant to realize what is technically characterized as Saman Adhikaranyam, the substantial oneness of the Jiva and Brahman. Adhikarana means substratum or foundation. And saman adhikaranya, that would be an adjective made out of the noun. No, not adjective, it's an abstract noun. It means, literally, sharing the same substratum. As a gold ring shares in the same essence as the larger mass of gold from which it was fashioned. Adhikarana also means location. So really, one simple way to understand samanadikaranyam, it's the condition of two things being in the same place. The flowerness resides in the flower. The blueness of that flower resides in the flower. So there's two different things, abstract things, flowerness and blueness, but they're both in the same thing. That's samanadikaranyam. It's not that the blue thing and the flower thing are two separate things. They're both the same flower. The you and the that are both aspects of the same absolute truth. According to the Mayavad view, the finite self is real only in that he is non-different from the Supreme. His appearance as a separate identity is false. But that this is an incorrect understanding of the non-difference. The finite self is one in substance with Brahman, but not identical with him. The delusion of the jiva only increases when he presumes himself identical with the Supreme. We can hardly expect a poor beggar in prison to free himself simply by imagining, "I am the king." In the famous phrase Tattvamasi, the word tat, that, refers to the Supreme, and tvam, you, to the individual soul. So sometimes in Vedanta discussions, you'll see reference to tat padartha and tvam padartha, the entity it and the entity you. It's not talking about you in particular. It's talking about the jiva. The jiva is the tvam, and the paramatma is the tat. That's jargon among Vedantists. This is what they call it, tat padartha and tvam padartha. You are that, therefore declares the saman adhikaranyam, the equality of Brahman and jiva. For the phrase tat, Vaishnava, this is important. Vaishnavacharyas interpret this equality as being qualitative and not extending to quantity. For the phrase tattvamasi to be a valid description of truth, they say, it should be read in a figurative rather than literal sense. You, the soul, are not absolutely identical with that, the Supreme. Rather, you are an essential part of that, and you belong to that. Even perfectly true statements sometimes include words intended to be understood figuratively. In the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna called his friend Arjuna a tiger among men, he did not intend to say that Arjuna was literally a tiger, but that he was strong and courageous as a tiger. He also called him a bull among men. A Vaishnava achieves liberation by realizing I am that, in the special sense that I am an eternal servant of that Supreme. Opposed to this is the ultimate snare of Maya, to claim the status of God on the grounds that I am that. To cover the sham of merely imagining oneself liberated, Mayavadis may propose that even though the entity you, the finite soul, is helpless, the entity that has effective power to bestow liberation. But this proposition unintentionally affirms the Vaishnava understanding that you and that are separate beings with different identities and powers. Only the personality of Godhead's causeless mercy can deliver the fallen souls. That last sentence. Tat padartha prabhavas tatra karanam. Tatra means in the matter of the liberation of the tvam padartha. It's the power of the tat padartha. And the tvam and the tat are the same, so the tvam is liberating himself. It doesn't work like that. The tat and the tvam are not the same. Otherwise, why distinguish that it has to be the power of the tat? It's like, you're God, but you don't know it. When you know you're God, then you can act like God. But it's, you know, the tvam, it is power as God. The living entity, in his power as being God, can liberate himself. But he's not God. He doesn't have that power. The tat padartha is somebody else. That's why the phrase is tat tvamasi. If it was just you, you know, you're identical with yourself, then it would be tvam tvamasi. You are you, period. But no, it's saying you are that, which is making a distinction as well as an equation. Not a mathematical formula, 2 + 2 = 4. This is different. Okay, that's 38. Any comments? Yes.
Aham Brahmasmi,
yeah. Anything wrong with it? I can't even put it in the right person. Us, me. Okay. Thanks. Okay. How come no one else caught that? Okay. Anything else? Yeah. Take the mic.
Just something that came to mind. I once heard that Madhvacharya said that it's actually attatvamasi. And
he offers a number of ways of explaining it, and that's one of the ways. He also, explains it as tat, the same way that Jiva Goswami does. Jiva Goswami is following him, and then he gives an alternative. Maybe it's not even tat anyway. Maybe it's atat. You aren't that, or you're something else than that. That's one of his alternative explanations. Okay, this doesn't require further discussion. Yes.
Just a little bit. Sometimes we use this figurative or lakshana vritti, like in the case of Arjuna, who is a tiger among the men. So, and how much to which extent we can use this figurative meaning?
In what?
In which extent we can use this figurative meaning? Because sometimes, if you read it literally, we cannot understand, but we have to apply. Because
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
What happens? We can't understand it.
In this case of tatvamasi, because
yes.
Literally it means that you are dead.
Yes,
it's literal meaning, and the Vaishnavacharyas they explain that it's.
They say we should not take it literally.
Yes.
Well, okay. The general rule that you learn in poetics is that you don't have a right to apply the figurative meaning until you run into a block trying to apply the literal meaning. When the literal meaning doesn't fit, then you can try a figurative meaning. First of all, figurative meanings have to be used all the time, not just in the Bhagavad Gita, in any ordinary conversation, discussion, talking with anybody. You can't say things adequately in any language without using some sort of metaphor quite often. Yeah. So it's a universal phenomenon, can't be avoided. The question is, when do you take something literally and when do you take it figuratively? But there are poetics teach you rules about that. Yes, but there are poetic reasons, reasons by the rules of poetry when you can and when you can't apply figurative understanding, but also there are logical situations, the actual situation and the logic of it, dictate whether something can't be literal. Just like there's nothing grammatically or poetically wrong with tatvamasi as a literal statement, but it's against the Siddhanta of the actual Vedanta to absolutely equate tat and tvam. It's just not true. So there's a logical problem there that requires taking it figuratively. It contradicts basic fact. Vishnu Kantabu.
Can we interpret that tatvam itself is a compound? So tat can actually mean a shashti of that means that, and tvam can just be prathama, and it can be like a sambandha na sambandhita dhatre ashraya shashti. So it can be you are of him. You belong to him, that kind of a meaning.
The samas is tat hyphen tvam?
Can be like
it's
that,
not samas. The word tatva with the tvam suffix. This is tat hyphen tvam.
Yeah.
What kind of samas is it? I'm sorry,
so
I didn't catch that.
Can we put that? Actually, it's tasya. And because of compound, it loses
no,
its...
No, but we have to explain the compound. What form, what kind of compound would that be?
It will be...
I don't think you can have tvam at the end of a compound. Okay, well, it is one of the explanations. Okay, but what was your suggestion? How did you explain the compound as meaning what?
Tasya
tvam. Then it'd be just a shashti tat purusha.
Yeah.
The tvam that belongs to him.
Yeah. So then that tasya, it can be because of the relationship sambandhe tadashriyat shashti. In the vigraha. So it can mean you belong to him. Like
in other words, the vigraha would be tatva tvam. Tatva tvamasi. You're the, which tvam are you? The tatva, the tasya tvam. Not somebody else's tvam. And that explanation is given?
Yeah.
Right. Where do you see it?
I can't remember. Vagisa told me about this again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who? All right. I heard tasya tvam, but I don't know if it involved taking it as a samas. Can tat be taken as tasya? Tat by itself could stand for some case without being a samasa also. Sometimes you see the pronoun, undeclined pronouns representing a case of a case form. It doesn't have to be a samasa, it can be.
Also, I looked in the text. In Madhvacharya's interpretation, some makes sense because it's what precedes tadvamasi is sa atma tadvamasi.
Well, okay, atma is the antecedent of tat. Tat goes with sa. He's the atma, and tat refers back to the same atma. And then he's saying, you're that atma.
He says atadvamasi, so the.
Oh, atat.
It makes. The sandhi is right.
There's a vowel just before it.
It could be atat or it could be tat.
Okay, that makes it possible to be atat.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, Bharat Ramprabhu.
Just this time, I met one Mayavadi also. He was charging about this tatvamasi. And he was saying, yeah, you can say all that, tasya tvamasi and all that, but... the problem is you are saying that you run into a contradiction running that, studying that, but it will be adamant on your, it will be being very adamant on your part to say that the Vedas have to teach something that's only within your realm of understanding. So, and actually it's a virtue of the Vedas, and actually those statements have to be taken seriously when the Veda is telling something new which is not within your realm of realization. So when all that you realize and all that you see is that you are different from tat, and then when the Veda says that you are that, then why don't you guys just accept that? Why do you guys be so adamant and...
Sorry, we can't accept that. Sorry. I know it sounds good, but we can't accept it.
It says
can't accept the absolute identity of God and the Jiva.
The Vedas takes, they are taking so much effort and 9 times it's being said and you people are just being arrogant and not accepting it.
Yeah, well, I guess we're just stubborn. Sorry. Yes.
You can say the same thing to them also. Why that you're all the time you're seeing and you're under your own understanding. Why don't you think something new that Jiva is different from Lord? It's the same argument we can put to him also.
Well, they'll say, we think about Jiva being different than God. That's our contingent reality. And we allow it for the sake of discussion. For those who are not self-realized, they can think about the Jiva being different than God. That's your illusion, but it's useful. So they'll accept it, hypothetically, as a tentative saguna brahman, look at the absolute truth. But anyway, I don't think we're going to be convinced by that argument. I don't think they're going to be convinced by that argument from us either. Yes.
The whole point was that a statement that reiterates what you already know is weaker than a statement that teaches something new.
In general.
Yeah. So they're saying.
But you can't, therefore the Vedas have to teach some nonsense just to teach something new. Yeah. If something's just false, then just because it's something new means you have to accept it, even if it's obviously false. Remember?
I think it is in Kavikarnapur's Chaitanya Chandrodaya that Advaita Acharya tells Lord Chaitanya, received the sannyasa initiation and then you got the Mahavakya Tattvamasi, and he says, now you have fulfilled the meaning of Tattvamasi because you are that. You are that Brahman.
I'm sorry, Lord Chaitanya said that to Advaita Charya?
Advaita Charya said that to Lord Chaitanya because in his...
Yes.
As a sannyasi, he received the Mahavakya, so...
Okay. Well, Lord Chaitanya, out of respect, will accept that from Advaita Charya. I wouldn't try saying that to him.
Just in terms of being actually Brahman. Or
yeah, but Lord Chaitanya generally doesn't tolerate hearing that, even though it's true. This is a case of, okay, it's true in that case, but he doesn't like to hear it. Lord Chaitanya doesn't like to be told that he's the absolute truth. Maybe did he accept it from Advaita Charya?
I heard that, but I don't. I assume that it was accepted, but I don't remember the rest of the.
Okay.
I also found a list from Vishnudas Acharya, is a follower of the Advaita tradition in the 15th century, and he Vishnudas Acharya.
Vishnudas, okay.
And he's interpreting it. I guess he's following Madhvacharya's translation to Tattvamasi in 20 different ways. But I only have the English, unfortunately. I don't have the Sanskrit.
Oh, this is a Madhvaita?
Yeah.
Okay. 20 different ways.
Yeah. So it's very flexible.
Yes. Okay. Should we move on? It's 39. Okay, now the other alternative. Suppose the upadis aren't real. Then what problems do we run into? Upadir avidyakatve tu tatra tatparichinnatvadir apyagatamanatvad avidyakatvam eveti gatakash adishu vastava upadimaya tadarshanaya natesham avastava swapna Drishtantopa jivinam siddhantak siddhyati gatamana gatamana yo sangate kartum ashakyatvat tatashchate sham tat tat sarvam avidya vilasitam eveti swarupam apraptina tena tena tad tad vyavastapayatum ashakyam. If, however, the upadis are unreal, products of illusion, their division or subjection to some other process is also an unreal illusion, because, in fact, no such process can occur in an unreal state. Okay. In such a case, using analogies that involve factually existing upadis, like that of the sky within a pot, there is a sky, there is a pot, cannot legitimately help the impersonalists establish the position, because their theory is based on the example of an unreal dream. It is impossible, after all, to establish a relationship between the existent and the non-existent. Therefore, whatever they propose to be true is nothing but the play of illusion. The whole theory is illusion. Such baseless ideas do nothing to prove the impersonalists' hypotheses. Commentary. Advaitavad claims to be neither nihilistic nor atheistic. After all, Shankaracharya's system has well-defined places for the relative realities of the personality of Godhead and the multitude of jivas. In the opinion of the Vaishnavacharyas, however, Shankara's Mayavad is a thinly disguised radical atheism with a covert theme of nothing is real. Because the kind of reality it allows for everyone involved, Brahman, God, and the jivas, is as good as no reality at all. This is also the opinion of Shabda Pramana. In the Padma Purana, for example, Lord Shiva tells Parvati, Maya vadama shachastram pachannam bauram ishyate mayaiva vihita devi kalau brahmana murtina. Mayavad is a faulty doctrine. In fact, it has simply covered Buddhism. In Kali Yuga, my dear goddess, I will take birth as a Brahmin to propagate this philosophy. We never found this verse? You found it? In the Pama Purana? Oh, okay. It doesn't show in the Nag Press edition. Or maybe it's there. Is it hiding in there? It's in the edition. Good. The Mayavadis distinguish three basic levels of reality. The real reality of impersonal Brahman is called Paramartika. On this level, Brahman is perfect and changeless, but it has no qualities, no varieties, and no activity. In short, the Mayavadis are saying, in effect, that Brahman is nothing, although they don't say so directly. The second level of reality is Vyavaharika. God, the jivas, and the physical universe belong to the Vyavaharika reality, the day-to-day working existence of illusion. The Vyavaharika upadhis imposed on Brahman have no absolute value and can fulfill their ultimate purpose only by annihilating themselves. Finally, dreams, hallucinations, and misperceptions belong to the Pratibhasika reality, the reality that exists only for a short time in one person's mind. In contrast to the public and longer-lasting reality of the Vyavaharika world, Pratibhasika experience, being illusion within illusion, is false in the strongest sense. As a matter of logical principle, Srila Jiva Goswami insists that the Vyavaharika existence of God and the jivas must be either real or unreal. If real, then God and the jivas cannot be merely products of illusion. If unreal, then the Vyavaharika upadhis of Ishvara and Jiva are nothing. And how can nothing have the power to transform Brahman, the perfect supreme? Indeed, how can analogies concerning the qualities of concrete things be used to explain the effect of nothing on Brahman? In our common experience, pots delimiting part of the atmosphere, or pots filled with water reflecting the sun, are simply instances of the interactions of matter in accordance with the Vyavaharika laws of nature. These physical laws, though helping scientists make sense of what occurs on the Vyavaharika level of existence, can hardly explain how Brahman could degrade from its state of Paramartika perfection. From the Vaishnava point of view, we can sensibly conclude that God, the jivas, the pots, and all the other things of the world, this world, are real in the same fundamental sense. The pots are just as real as God. The Supreme Lord and the subordinate living beings enjoy a higher kind of reality because they are conscious, whereas pots are not. And the highest reality of God is God, because only his consciousness and power of control are limitless. Vaishnavacharyas have concluded that the examples of Parichet and Pratibimba spoken of in the Upanishads are meaningful only because the entities described in such analogies factually take part in the reality of the Supreme. Thus, the things of this world are finite samples of the Supreme, and by studying them under proper guidance, we can begin to understand the Supreme. Self-knowledge of the jiva is especially useful for this purpose. In the examples of Paricheda and Pratibimba cited in the Upanishads, the pot represents the individual jiva. The jiva is like a pot delimiting a part of the sky, in that he incorporates within himself a minute portion of God's perfect existence, his eternity, consciousness, and pleasure. And he is like a water-filled pot reflecting the sun, in the sense that he is in fact a small reflection of the Supreme. He is a person because God is a person. Thus the jiva's form and personality reflect those of God. Well, okay. Main argument in this Anuchet. If we take the alternative that the upadis, or the, how do we, what's the translation I give later on? Imaginary features of the Supreme. If they're imaginary in the sense not that they're something other than what they really are, but that they don't exist at all, if they're unreal, then how can they actually do anything to Brahman? How can Brahman become duality? If the upadis don't exist, then what can they do? Something that doesn't exist can't do anything. And also, we're talking about relationship between Brahman and the avidya. But if avidya doesn't exist, then how can it have a relationship with Brahman, which does exist? It doesn't make sense to talk about a relationship between what exists and what doesn't exist. Okay, so that pretty much defeats both ways of explaining the power of illusion. If Brahman has to be formless and have no qualities in its absolute reality, then there's no way that duality could have arisen from it. And then your theory fails to explain the world that we see right in front of us. It's a very nice idea about an absolute truth that's perfect and changeless. But what about the duality that we see with our own eyes and can't avoid? How do you explain that? And the Mayavad theory can't explain how duality arises from an absolute truth that has no variety. Okay, discussion? Yeah. Okay, then you first.
I'm just wondering, how did anybody ever point it out to the Mayavadis that how can something which is not real exert influence upon something which is real?
Yes, it has been. Jiva Goswami is simply giving us old arguments. I don't know who said it exactly, but I'm sure both the Madhvites and the Ramanujas, I'm sure they both came up with the same argument. Yes. Right? So my writers have been told that they have their way of trying to explain it away and get and avoid being pinned down. They're clever. Yes.
I'm not sure about it, but I think that one of the great seven untenables of Ramanujacharya is...
What?
He has this...
who is it?
Ramanujacharya.
Yeah?
He wrote this book called The Seven Great Untenables. I'm not sure of the Sanskrit name.
Seven Great Untenables. I don't know this. Untenables means things you can't understand. No, that means ideas that can't be supported.
Mm-hmm.
Unjustifiable ideas, untenables.
And I believe that one of them is that Maya has no shelter in Brahman. That's the fault in Advaita philosophy.
That sounds right. I don't think it was written by Ramanujacharya.
That's okay.
I don't know the book, but it doesn't sound like a book he wrote. But somebody.
Or it could be his follower.
Yeah, follower of Ramanuja.
I just saw it. So I believe that one of them is that there is no... Did you have a share? There is no shelter for Maya.
Yeah, Maya has to have a shelter. She can't be independent.
Yeah.
She's independent, then she's another absolute truth.
So that idea is pointed, but I don't know what is the Mayavadi answer to that.
They've got some answer. If you were reading, a heavy book of polemics, of arguing, like, Nyayamrita of Vyastirtha, then you would hear back and forth, the arguments back and forth. But Jiva Goswami just wants to make a simple, establishing that the Mayavadis are wrong without getting into all the bloody fighting back and forth. It's just not it would be a big distraction for us in the toughest snow. We just want to get down to business here. And those who need to hear both sides of it back and forth, they can go, that's available elsewhere. Vishnukandava?
In
in the middle of the paragraph that indeed how can the analogies concerning the qualities of concrete things be used to explain the effect of nothing on Brahman. So can we extend this, like most of the analogies are related to pots and cloth, thread and all these things.
Yes.
So how can we expect that such analogies can explain things beyond our perception, not just the nothingness of Brahman, but even about the achintya concepts, like most of the concepts, we compare it to these things, cloth, thread. So how we can
well, the Upanishads do use these examples. So we don't want to criticize, find fault with the Upanishads. Upanishads do, these examples are coming from the Upanishads, just the Mayavadis are taking them and misapplying them, taking them too literally. But they are given in the Vedas. So they do serve a purpose. Absolute truth is inconceivable, ultimately, but you can understand a lot from appropriate explanations. It's not that you can't say anything useful about the absolute truth. If you couldn't, then the Upanishads serve no purpose. They're supposed to be words describing, explaining the absolute truth to conditioned souls. And if that can't be done at all, then there shouldn't be any Upanishads. They're just a waste of, waste of good birch bark to write them down.
Because the jiva's intelligence is so minute and infinitesimal, so maybe to relate to such an insignificant person, they are supplying these analogies and
yes, like for the help of limited living entities with limited capacity to understand, but they're pointing to the real truth. Analogies only help you understand. But they do serve that purpose. They're not useless. Otherwise, why are the Vedas wasting so much time giving all these analogies? Upanishads are full of analogies like this. The thing is, it's not such a problem if the absolute truth has qualities, and then you talk about pots and drops of water and different things. At least you're comparing something that has qualities to something else that has qualities. You run into even much more a problem when you use things with qualities to explain something that has no qualities. Then it doesn't work. But you can get a lot of help from understanding the absolute truth in terms of material things, because the material things are expansions of the absolute truth and reflections of it. And as long as the absolute truth is allowed to have qualities, the examples are useful. Yes.
It's a bit difficult to understand for me, at least. But they can claim that all this, those examples, is like a Chandra Shakar Nyaya, like pointing on the branches of tree in order to find a moon in the sky. So all those explanation in Upanishads is just words, just something superficial, in order to make us to follow some practice. For example, they tell that actually you're one with Supreme, and all those examples is just to make you follow this path, this sadhana, in order to make you one with Supreme. And then when you start following this sadhana, you realize that you're really Supreme. They can claim like this. Or,
well, okay, but this
is... Yeah.
Yes?
And also, somehow we also followed the same principle that actually we cannot understand Krishna only by speculation or only by studying Vedas. We have to start serving him. It means we have to start some practice.
But the qualifying word is only. It's not that the Vedas don't show us Krishna, but in order to actually establish a personal relationship with Krishna, you have to practice devotional service. It's not that the Vedas do not reveal knowledge of the absolute truth, even of Krishna. They do. When the Mayavadis say that all the statements of the Shastra are only Lakshana Vritti, they're taking a much more radical critique that because the absolute has no qualities, any description of qualities can't really be describing the absolute. No, they are describing the absolute. They're not describing everything about the absolute, but they're describing real things about it. We say that the Lord is the creator. Everything must have a creation. Like a pot, it must have a potter who made it. The Lord, the absolute creator, is like that potter. Everything that's created must have a creator. That's a good analogy. It's pointing to the absolute truth, but it is actually pointing to the absolute truth. It is saying something true and correct. It's not just saying words to enthuse you to follow some practice, even though the words mean nothing or are false. The words are not false. They're describing the real fact that the absolute truth, Brahman, is a creator like a potter. He's not, he doesn't have a wart on his nose like the potter, but he does create things like the potter does, and he does share that much with the potter. That's true. It's an analogy, but it's a real analogy. It's not just saying something to make you believe that you're doing something spiritual, but it's telling you the truth.
So this is the difference between our interpretation of those analogies and the Mayavadis?
Yeah. Yes. When they say the Vedas are nothing but lakshana vritti, that means the Vedas don't have any literal meaning. But you can't have proper lakshana vritti unless there is an underlying literal meaning. We can say the village on the Ganga because we know what a village is, we know what the Ganga is, and the sentence makes sense. If you didn't have a sensible literal meaning, then you can't, on top of that, create a figurative meaning. So the Vedas can be understood literally. And then from that, we can understand other things that are implied by suggestion and by metaphor and by suggestion.
And therefore, we told that all those objects in this material world are some representation of absolute truth, and therefore we can use it in order to point to absolute truth.
Yes, but real representation, not just imaginary. The pot is an energy, a real energy of the absolute truth. It is real. The pot is just as real as God is. Okay. Yes, pardon.
It was just a funny thing, like how they make it was just a funny thing how they make a pun, not pun, yeah, how they make some fun on them, that the world is false, and your Advaita theory, which is a part of that world, is also false.
Yes. That's what Jiva Goswami said it right here, that your whole theory is nothing but illusion.
Yeah. And
the pseudo theory. Yes.
They made a movie of this, Madhva, in that the Shankaras, they steal his books.
Yes.
The Shankaras, they steal his books.
They steal, did they really do that?
I've not seen that in Madhva Vijaya. Yeah. I didn't read completely. But yes. In that movie they put it. And when Madhva goes to claim it back from them, they say, no, really we have not stolen. So Madhva says, oh, for you the whole world is false. Then what is real? What do you mean really you have not stolen?
Yes. Thank you.
I heard one joke also from Varghese Prabhu about this soham, that one time there was a Mayavadi and he saw a wall and he got out his spray can and soham, he graffitied the wall with soham, and then a Vaishnava came along and he saw it and he added the letters da at the beginning, da soham.
Oh, da soham. Yes. Sadasa?
Always.
I'm always.
And then again, dasa ham.
Joy, thank you. We can stop now. Okay. Class this evening. You mean this pronunciation class?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I don't know the details. Can you tell? Oh, yes. This is a 4-day seminar on pronunciation. Please, everybody attend. We're supposed to be experts in Sanskrit, so if we can get a little improvement in our pronunciation, it won't hurt. Okay, it's only 4 days. It won't hurt. Okay. What time is it? 4 o'clock, every other day at 4 o'clock for 4 days. For over 8 days, four sessions. Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And then the next Monday after that, 4 days.
4 to 6.
Okay. It's a good presentation. Please come. He's a nice devotee. Yes. Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Shri Jiva Goswami Ki Jai.